Welcome into Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth, Jeremy K. Gover here with you on this NHL Free Agent Frenzy Day across the National Hockey League. A special edition of Preds Insiders here. Jeremy K. Gover is joining me to break down all the things that have gone on with the Nashville Predators today. Not a whole lot. Nothing that was too surprising, at least to this point in the day. We are 7 hours into the free agent frenzy officially beginning. Later in the hour, we will get to some of the major stuff that did go down across the league. But Gover, first of all, it is great to have you on the show, as always. You know, even though you're in your semi-retirement, but not really.
Hey, as I explained in the last Preds Insiders, you know, I got an AP radio gig, and that's keeping me busy, keeping my toe in the Nashville media landscape waters, if you will, and so I'm thrilled to be following along, just like everybody else today, and talking to you on this show.
Well, we do have a lot to get to, and first of all, there was a pretty big 180 that took place with Mikael Granlund and the Nashville Predators, where Adam Vinken joined Darren Donick and Chase earlier in the show around 10:15 and stated that it wasn't looking good that Mikael Granlund was going to return to the Predators. About an hour later, Mikael Granlund was returning to the Nashville Predators on a four-year deal worth $20 million. We'll get to that deal specifically here in a minute. The Preds have also added David Rittich, goaltender from the Calgary Flames and briefly with the Toronto Maple Leafs last season. He will be essentially the backup to UC Saros. So Saros and Rittich will be the goaltending duo going into next season for the Nashville Predators. So we'll get to that as well and looking at the team in a big picture point of view. But Gover, let's start with the Mikael Granlund signing. I was a little surprised that David Poile went to a fourth year on the contract for Mikael Granlund. I was thinking this was going to be more of a 2 or 3 year contract for Granlund wherever he signed. And he ends up landing a four-year deal worth $20 million. And first of all, what was your reaction to everything that happened this morning from Vinken's report that it was looking unlikely to an hour later saying that it was actually going to happen with Granlund coming back to the Preds?
So this morning I was actually listening to the show when that all happened. And I remember thinking, well, that's unfortunate. But I also understand, or I also understood that that could signify a few things. One, bringing Granlund in would, in theory, take away a roster spot from a young guy that they want to see what they have. Okay, and that's important, and I'm sure we'll get to all that later on. But there was that. But there was also the point of like, well, you know, next summer's draft is pretty stacked. I mean, it is. The consensus is that it's pretty legit. So I'm not saying they're trying to tank by any means, but if they're more willing to go young and cheap in this, you know, with the safety net of, well, you know, hey, if we don't make the playoffs, we'll get to draft a possible franchise player. And that's something that, as you and I know, Porth, we covered the Seth Jones draft together, right? In New Jersey. So we know that it doesn't come around very often, right? They picked fourth overall that year. And that was the highest they've picked since, I think, Scott Hartnell or somebody really early on in the franchise's history. So to get, and I'm not saying they should be, you know, one of the top or the worst five teams in the league, but I'm saying that, you know, the lottery, anything can happen. And if you are in that, and if the draft is so stacked, maybe you're picking 7th, 8th, 9th, and you can still get a franchise player there. So I was like, all right, I can kind of see that it's a calculated strategy. And then next thing you know, I'm sitting on my couch and Granlund is now returning to Nashville, and all that happened in like 90 minutes. And so I scrambled to my computer and, you know, drew up a new lineup, which again, we'll get to. But, to me, it's interesting because it's happened now twice, 2 years in a row, where Granlund and Nashville seem to have parted ways. And then next thing you know, they're back together. And so I don't know what to make of that. Maybe that's just his strategy of doing business, is holding out as long as possible, but he's only going to hold out until he is ready to pull the trigger. I don't know, but either way, it's very curious.
Yeah, well, maybe they went to market They didn't get a fifth year. Maybe they were looking for a fifth year on the contract, and they couldn't get it from another team, so they settled for a fourth year with the Predators. Or perhaps Granlund got a fourth year from another team, and they countered with the Preds, and David Poile was willing to go to a fourth year. So who knows what happened there between Granlund and the Preds, but he is coming back. And look, we all understand what Granlund's value has been to the Predators. I'm going off this tweet that Adam Vingan put out there earlier today with Mikael Granlund under John Hines since he took over midway through the 1920 season, when looking at how Granlund has been effective compared to the other forwards. First in games, first in goals, second in points to Philip Forsberg, first in time on ice, and first in shot percentage. So Granlund has clearly been a very effective player. I think we would both agree, Gover, that he was the best forward for the Nashville Predators this past season. I just kind of want to know what the role is going to be for Mikael Granlund, especially for the 4 years. Like, are they going to bring him back as a center? His best point in time with the Nashville Predators was late last season when he was playing center. Are they going to move him back to wing and have Duchesne or Cody Glass be the second-line center? Are they going to keep him at center? And if so, then you are creating a glut at center. Duchesne then probably moves to the wing. Then Cody Glass might be a bottom-six center. So just from a, you know, a putting the puzzle piece together standpoint, I don't know if bringing back Granlund makes the most sense with what the roster looks like today. Like, if I were to dole out the $5 million that you gave out to Granlund, I probably would have spent it on a player like a Brandon Saad or another player that is strictly a winger, and then you give Cody Glass the opportunity as a second-line center, or you move Duchesne back to second-line center. Like, I don't know. I have always appreciated the value of Granlund, especially this calendar year, but I wasn't gung-ho about bringing him back, especially now that we know that it's going to be a fourth year taking him to age 33.
I don't have a problem with the 4 years too much. I think he wanted some, I don't know, location security. You got to remember, he had a lot. I mean, he might even have PTSD. I use that jokingly, of course, for everybody. But PTSD from the only trade he's ever been involved in, coming from Minnesota to Nashville on the day that his, you know, his girlfriend at the time, I think, gave birth to their first kid. So a lot has happened, and he probably doesn't want to uproot his family. You know, I don't know. There's a bunch of reasons you can go into and speculate about. But I don't have a problem with the 4 years as much as other people do. I think it is long. I think I would have probably liked three. But I think if the Predators had to give him the fourth year to get him in the fold, because we got to remember, too, this is more than just the player, Porth. This player has made, in a sense now, this specific coaching hire valid. Because the Predators now can point back and say, well, yeah, John Hines was the right coach to pick. Look how well Mikael Granlund's done compared to when he was with LaViolette. And so there's a lot of things to like about the player, because obviously, like you said, he was their best player, definitely their most complete player last season. But, you know, he's a guy who apparently makes this Hines thing catch on, right? So to me, there's more than that. I don't know if it's a bad or a good thing, to be honest. Maybe you want him to go somewhere else so that way you can see if Coach Hines is the right guy. I don't know, but whatever your perspective is on that. But to me, it's more than just the player, and the player is good enough for me. So I don't have a problem with the fourth year if they had to give it to him.
I think the thing that would validate John Hines is if he was able to get something out of Matt Duchesne, or if he was able to get Ryan Johansson to play more consistently than just showing up in the playoffs, you know? Like, I do hear you on the fact that he's gotten more out of Granlund than Peter Laviolette did, but I don't know if this completely makes us truly understand, like, the Hines hire and proves him as the coach of this team.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that from Poile's perspective and the brass's perspective, right, this is a guy that is, by comparison to Laviolette, is excelling under Hines. And so to let him walk for nothing and have Arvidsson, you know, he didn't say this, but when he left, he basically insinuated that he didn't like how he was being used And that's a coaching issue, is what that basically is. He didn't say that, but that's exactly what it is. And then there's other guys that have kind of hinted around there's an issue there. Right? Duchesne is he's not shy. He's also very calculated, but he's not shy about being candid and honest. And he's specifically said on these airwaves, he specifically said, I came here to be a center. I don't want to play wing, but I'll play where I'm needed to play. Mm-hmm. That's a very nice way of saying, I don't want to play a wing. I want to be a center because that's where I feel like I'm best. So, again, Granlund, you don't have any of those issues, right? So it's almost like an indirect validation of the coaching hire, in my opinion.
Sure. Well, another branch off of the Granlund re-signing is the fact that now it kind of looks like their forward group, unless they make changes to the current forward group. I mean, I kind of think they might be done at forward. I mean, they've got 13 NHL forwards if you include Philip Tomasino in the mix. So at the same time, like, where is the size? This is something that I have been bringing up ever since they did not re-sign Brian Boyle. Like, they don't have much size at forward right now. Who's going to stand in front of the net on the power play? Like, the way Ryan Johansson played in the playoffs, like, it probably should be someone like Ryan Johansson, but he hasn't been playing that role on the power play. So, like, this forward group does not impress me all that much. I think there are a lot of question marks at forward right now. What is Tomasino? Is Tolvanen just a power play specialist, or are they going to be able to get more out of him 5-on-5 this season? Is Duchesne going to be really only a fit next to Forsberg and Johansson on the top line? Can he be the second line center? What is Cody Glass? There are so many question marks at forward right now that we're simply not going to have answers to until probably midway through this season.
So to answer your question, the last question that I actually talked my way around, and I apologize, Granlund to me is a second-line center. He excelled there, so I say you keep him there. Plus, on top of that, Duchesne's supposed to be a center, but has excelled, right, down the stretch and in the playoffs as the wing to Forsberg and Johansson. That's where he has his most value, whether he likes it or not. Okay, there, I've answered your last question. I apologize for glossing over it. The second part is the size comes from Johansson if he can use his size more often. But at this point in his career, you know, if seems to be in April or May, right? And then, but I think you have some size in Tanner Janot. You've got some size in Yakov Trenin. Now, are these guys power play guys? I mean, I don't know. But if you're looking for a guy to stand in front and be that Patrick Hornqvist type player, I mean, who better than to go to Tanner Janot and be like, hey, you want some power play time? What's he going to say? No, I'm good. I'm going to go ahead and stay. No, he's going to jump at that chance, and he's going to do whatever it takes, right? So
sure.
Just to endear himself even more to Preds fans already, this is a guy that I think they can use in that role if they need, which they do, a net front presence, a consistent net front presence to sit in there and take abuse. I think Tanner Janot is probably your best candidate right now, even though he's a fourth-line player.
So if you're going to have Granlund as your second line center, he's now under contract for the next 4 years. You have Ryan Johansson under contract for a long time. Matt Duchesne under contract for a long time. Both of them are natural centers. I think we would both agree that this makes it more likely that Duchesne at least starts the season on the wing coming up. So Cody Glass is a player that, if anybody read Adam Vingan's article on The Athletic with comments from Peter DeBoer about how Cody Glass needs to play around top six level players. So is Cody Glass now going to be relegated to the third line? Is that how they see him? Like, again, a lot more questions than we have answers. And I don't see how this puzzle, how the pieces fit into the puzzle at forward right now. So surely this is an incomplete project that we're looking at, or John Hines is going to have a lot of juggling to do with how to make this cookie crumble come September.
don't know if we want to pick this up on the other side or not, Porth, but I will say that my lineup is pretty much set as of this moment at 6:15, on Wednesday.
Could change at 6:20.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, there's no telling. But yeah, right now I think my personal lineup is set, and I've got Glass as the third line center, but I've got him. It's hard to say second line kind of players, because on this team, I mean, who are the second line players? Is Cunningham good enough to be a second line player all the time? Since the injury, absolutely, he looks like that, but how's he going to do 82 games wise, right?
Sure.
So Tolvanen, you put Tolvanen in that category, but I also put Tomasino in that category. You project him as a second line player, throw him with Glass, let them create some chemistry, and now you've got a third line that can maybe punch in some score, and then you've got Rocco Grimaldi also, who can provide some speed if he can find his way into the lineup, which I'm still waiting for.
Right, and I think a lot of people are still waiting for that, because ever since John Hines took over as coach, Rocco Grimaldi has seen his opportunities decrease, even though he had that 4-goal game against the Detroit Red Wings this past season. All right, on the other side, we will get to what our lineups would look like today. Also, the David Rittich sighting, we'll dive into that a little bit deeper. We'll get to all of that coming up next on Preds Insiders. Preds Insiders brought to you every week by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. It's Preds Insiders. Alongside Jeremy K. Gover, I'm Ryan Porth, and this is ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, live on this Wednesday evening. It is ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app and on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch. We've got live video of Jeremy K. Gover and myself, Ryan Porth, talking all things Nashville Predators on day one of NHL free agency. You can text or call us at our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, and weigh in on this conversation over Mikael Granlund, over the Nashville Predators. A lot going on with this club, trying to figure out which direction they're going, especially at forward here, after bringing back Mikael Granlund on a 4-year deal worth $20 million. Earlier today, they also signed David Rittich to a 1-year, $1.25 million deal to back up UC Saros. We'll get to that deal here momentarily. But Gover, you have a lineup. If you were John Hines, you have a lineup that you would like to share if the season opener against the Seattle Kraken, who signed Philip Grubauer today, by the way, big surprise. If opening night was tomorrow night, you have a day one lineup all ready to go. Let's hear it.
I do. So as of 6:21 on Wednesday, because as Porth said earlier, it could change at 6:25.
Did it change? Did it change from 6:15 to 6:20?
I don't know. I can't watch my Twitter feed at the same time as reading this off, so hopefully it doesn't. But as of right now, at the taping of this show, we have my top line is Forsberg, Johansson, Duchesne, because they've had the most success together. It's how you get the most out of Duchesne, and at this point, you got to get what you can get. Second line of Tolvanen, Granlund, and Cunningham. Granlund and Cunningham look pretty good, and then you put Tolvanen in there, give him a full season in that second line. That sets him up for success, gives him some offensive players to work with, right? Again, I said last segment, Grimaldi, Glass, Tomasino is my third line. You give Tomasino that taste of NHL action on that third line, but he's not playing 18 minutes a game, right? You know, maybe he might once the power play kind of comes in full swing, but overall, it's Grimaldi who needs to get in the lineup, in my opinion. Glass, who you're trying to audition for maybe a second line center role, once you kind of do some adjusting with your roster, eventually, whenever that happens, it could be later this season at the trade deadline, or it could be next season, who knows. But I have Grimaldi, Glass, and Tomasino as third line, and my fourth line is the beast line. Janot, Sissons, and Trennan. Again, that line was
the herd,
so you leave that alone.
It's the herd.
Herd line. Yeah, herd line. So then defense, probably self-explanatory. Josi and Carrier. I have Ekholm and Fabro together. I know there's some trepidation about that, but they, again, this is just opening night, not the whole season. I think Ekholm and Fabro know each other well enough that they can do the job. And then I have Borowiecki and Myers on the third pair. And then I've got Saros and, of course, Rittich backing him up. My extras are Cousins, Pitlick, Benning, and Harper. Pitlick is the only gratuitous one in the sense that I think he deserves an NHL shot. The other three are signed, and they're NHL players.
I would put Nick Cousins in over Rocco Grimaldi in your lineup.
That's fine, but it's you know what? It's personal with this. No, it's not. But yeah.
I mean, Cousins would provide you bite and grit on a line with
sure.
with Glass and Tomasino, both you would hope are a little bit more offensive minded. If that were to be the lineup, Grimaldi is a defensive liability. So I would side with putting Cousins in over Grimaldi in that lineup, but I think I'm okay with your lineup if this were the team that you're riding with to start the season for night one. I think I would be okay with that lineup.
I think this that's fair, by the way, Porth. Grimaldi over Cousins is my call. I'm happy to switch those. That's fine. Because you're right. Cousins will give them more defensive responsibility on that line. I would be lying if I knew how defensively responsible Cody Glass was. But I will say that Tomasino is new. He's going to be deer in headlights for at least a little bit until the game kind of, we hear this all the time, right? Kind of slows down
sure.
for the new guys, right? So once that happens, I think he'll be fine. But certainly, again, opening night, I have no problem with putting Cousins in there over Grimaldi. My issue is just Grimaldi deserved a shot in the playoffs, especially when they needed tenacity, and so this would be a way to repay him for that.
That's so we would both have UC Saros starting a net and David Riddick backing up Saros, and Riddick, new member of the Nashville Predators as of this afternoon, signing a one-year, $1.25 million deal. He's not someone that was necessarily on my radar. I think for me personally, I was shooting a little bit higher than David Riddick to be the backup to UC Saros.
But, agreed.
But that doesn't mean Riddick may not come in and be a fine backup to this club. One thing that I do think you have to keep in mind when looking at his career numbers, which do not stand out, it's a .907 career save percentage, a 2.82 goals against average. So on the surface, he doesn't look like that great of a goaltender that he's going to come in and steal the show. Calgary hasn't always been the most defensively responsible team. So if they play to a system like they did in the second half of the season, I wonder if David Riddick's numbers are going to look better here in Nashville than they did in Calgary. And he didn't have great numbers in Toronto, but he played four games there. So I don't think you take much into that at all. So, I mean, I'm okay with it. It's a cheap signing. It's a one-year deal. There's not much risk involved here. You know, he has better numbers than Braden Holtby in the last 4 years outside of winning a cup. And Holtby got more money with the Stars. So, at the end of the day, I guess I'm okay with Riddick. They could have done better, but they could have done worse.
Yeah, that's very well said, that last sentence. They could have done better, for sure, I think. I'm not a fan of this David Riddick signing. My issue is that he's got a decent great record. I mean, he's got a decent record, right? 64, 40, and 16 overall for a Calgary team that's been, you know, it's been good, been bad, kind of inconsistent throughout his stint there. But so 64, 40, and 16 is not terrible. You're okay. It's a backup goaltender numbers. That's great, right? But then you look at his save percentage. You take it one step further at his save percentage, which is more telling about how a goaltender performs. And he's got a .907 career save percentage, like you mentioned. But the kicker for me is he's only had as high as .911 once. Nothing over .911, which is red flag number one. And number two is his second highest is .907, which is not where you want to be. So, again, he's a backup. I get it. But, you know, Saros has dealt with some injuries before. You know, can he take a whole 82-game season and play 60 games? Right? So, there's a lot of question marks there. You have faith in him that he can do the job, for sure. But can he go 60 games and still keep that stamina up for the playoff run, which is what you're playing for? If that's the case, Riddick is going to have to pitch in a few victories every now and then. And I don't have as much confidence that that's going to happen as I would have had they signed Antti Raanta, who, by the way, signed his deal with Carolina for 2 years for $2 million.
By the way.
So it's not much more, but at the same time, it is 2 years. And as I tweeted out earlier today and yesterday, I think the Predators have a very clear vision in goal, and a two-year contract for a guy doesn't fit. So in that case, you are correct. David Riddick, they could have done better, but they could have done worse.
And I think they will be going year by year with this until Askarov is ready from Russia. So the one-year deal makes a whole lot of sense. By the way, how about Carolina ending up with Freddie Anderson and Antti Raanta as their two goalies in place of Peter Mrazek, Alex Nedeljkovic, and James Reimer? I mean, wild stuff going on in Carolina. We won't even get into the Tony D'Angelo stuff, but holy smokes, there is a lot going on with the Carolina Hurricanes right now. They have definitely taken a step back since they got beat, or since they beat the Nashville Predators in round one of the playoffs. Coming up next, what is this team? Are they a playoff team? Are they rebuilding? Are they trying to do both at the same time? What is this Nashville Predators team? We'll dive deeper into that. On the other side, he's Jeremy K. Gover. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening and watching Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch. We'll be right back. Welcome back into Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Also, live video on YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch. And if you're watching, Jeremy K. Gover, his outfit has changed as he's getting ready for his hockey game that he's going to be going to after this show. So I'm really interested, Gover, to see if you're going to be in your Mighty Drunks jersey on the other side, like at 6:45. I'm really interested to see how this is going to evolve as the show goes along here.
I never thought I'd say this, Porth, because I'm about 60 pounds overweight, but you'll have to tune in to find out what I'm wearing.
Or watch.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so the Nashville Predators today re-signing Mikael Granlund, 4 years, $20 million. They signed David Riddick to a one-year deal worth $1.25 million. They also made some secondary moves that don't know how much they're really going to mean at the NHL level this coming season. They've got $20.7 million of cap space. They've got a handful of restricted free agents to re-sign: UC Saros, Dante Fabro, Ellie Tolvanen, Matthew Olivier. So you figure that cap space will be cut maybe in half, maybe a little less than that. Who knows? I don't know how many more changes are going to be made to this roster, Gover, unless David Poile finds a taker for Matt Duchene's contract. And if that happens, then that could be a domino for other moves to take place. But as we have detailed so far, they already have a lot of NHL-level forwards, especially if you include Philip Tomasino into the mix. So it's tough to gauge which direction they're really going to go if this is truly the opening night roster. And something stuck out to me today, Gover, from when David Poile met with the media at 4:30. And we've heard him recently say that he's looking at this as a competitive rebuild when asked whether this is a rebuild or not with this Predators team. And a big question that I've been asking myself here in the last few days, especially this afternoon, is, all right, what is this team? If this is mostly the roster that we're going to be looking at on opening night, what is this team? Are they competitive enough to compete for a playoff spot? We've seen other teams in the Central Division get better throughout the last week or so. Are they a team that is going to end up going into one of those valleys and rebuilding? I don't know if that is really the end goal. I don't really think it is. If you're going out and spending money on Mikael Granlund to come back, but something that he said today is something that I hope he sticks to, and that is the embracing of the youth movement. He went down that road again today, like he did last year in the offseason, and then he ended up signing some veterans that ended up taking away ice time from younger players. And then once the younger players got a chance because of injury, this team took off and made a run for a playoff spot, and they ultimately got that playoff spot. And he alluded to that again today, and I hope he sticks to this and that there aren't a lot of other depth veteran moves coming in the coming days in free agency that end up taking ice time away from guys like a Matthew Olivier or Tanner Jeannot or Rem Pitlick or Philip Tomasino, or continuing to bump youth down the depth chart like an Ellie Tolvanen or somebody. Like, it's time for this franchise to embrace the youth movement and see what they have with the younger players. I think Adam Vingan has put it really well here in the last couple days on this radio station of it's more important for the Preds to figure out what they have in the youth than it is for them to worry about a playoff spot. And what I would add to that is if the youth lead you to a playoff spot, then I think that is a positive sign for the future. But I don't know if you can continue to pursue a playoff spot and have the collateral damage be these young players continue to not get proper ice time to help their development. So that was something that stood out to me today from David Poile. And while he has been preaching this competitive rebuild, I hope that includes this youth movement that he alluded to today.
I'm with you on that. Last summer, he seemed to be very clear with us that it was going to be a youth movement and they're going to embrace the youth. I took that, and I'm sure a lot of us did, but I took it as we need to get cheaper because of COVID, and you know our payroll can't be that high. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to flirt with the cap ceiling anymore. You know, that kind of thing. That's how I kind of translated that. But after seeing, in retrospect, after seeing how they responded in March, the youth movement basically when they were forced, they're kind of thrust into the spotlight and into playing roles, they performed really well, and they single-handedly got this team into a playoff spot. So I think that just backs up this time. So if he says it again, right, this is going to be a youth movement. We're really going to embrace the youth. We're going to see it. I think there's a lot better foundation to stand on because you've got now the experience, right? Now the youth have shown you, at least for a brief cup of coffee, they have shown you that they can follow Heinz's system, embrace the role, go out there and kick some tail. Okay, get you some, you know, some one goal wins. Like you can dominate a few here and there. You know, if you lose, it's a tight one. You know, that kind of thing. They really did propel this team when some of the stars were out, and so it's a good sign going forward. That being said, is it a flash in the pan? And I think that's what the Predators team is going to have to find out. I'll take your question one point further, Ryan, and I'll ask you this. Let's just say they're not a playoff team, okay? Maybe they're not horrible. You know, they're not like the top. They're not like the worst five teams in the league or something like that. But it's just clear that they're not a playoff team. Okay, what does that do to Philip Forsberg and Mattias Ekholm? Now, Mattias Ekholm, I think has the attitude. He's actually been interviewed before. I think about this about how he gets paid way too much money and this and that. So I think he has the attitude of, yeah, of course I want to win, but I'm invested in this. Whereas Philip Forsberg, for some reason, strikes me as somebody who would want to go to a contender, right? Even though he's only 26 years old and Ekholm's 31. So my point, though, regardless of all that, is that where does that put those guys? Because they need to re-sign those guys. And they need to re-sign them before next season before they hit the open market. And they're going to get, I mean, a lot of cash, right, wherever they go. So I guess what I'm saying is, if they're going to embrace the youth movement, that's fine. If the competitive rebuild, I think, is almost a key word to keep Forsberg and Ekholm invested. Because if they say rebuild, when you're going through a rebuild, you're kind of stuck with Duchesne and Johansson. I think we all kind of know that.
Sure.
But Forsberg and Ekholm are the wild cards. They're the ones that can really speed up that rebuild, if you will, because they're cement blocks in a great foundation that this team has built. And, you know, they're star players in their own right. So I'm very, very interested to see if this truly is it. You know, maybe they, I don't know, they always seem to add an eighth defenseman at some point during the summer. But if this is truly it, or if they are able to move the Duchesne contract under any circumstances, or what. But either way, I think it all leads to what does Forsberg and Ekholm do?
Well, and those two should be bigger priorities than going out and signing more free agents. Getting Forsberg and Ekholm locked up long-ish term should absolutely be the priority now for David Poile after he gets some of these restricted free agents in his rearview mirror. Now, David Poile did say today that it's probably going to be closer to training camp before there's much movement on the Forsberg and Ekholm front. I am in agreement with you that I would be a little bit more curious about where Forsberg's mind is going with all of this than Mattias Ekholm. I think Ekholm, he has more roots down here. Not that Forsberg doesn't, but we all know Ekholm loves Nashville, loves playing for the Nashville right. Predators. He made that very clear when his name popped up in trade rumors during the season. I would fully expect him to resign. I would be surprised if he didn't, given the fact that David Poile just traded Ryan Ellis. I don't think David Poile trades Ellis without knowing that Ekholm, or having a really good feeling that Ekholm is going to resign. I mean, it's kind of a catch-22 with the timing of this, right? like I'm sure Forsberg and Ekholm, maybe more Forsberg, they want to see what this team can be or is, but I don't know if David Poile can afford to go deep into the season with these two still on the roster without a contract extension. Because then,
especially with a deep draft next summer, if you can flip Forsberg at the deadline for something pretty,
sure. Right? But
especially if he blows it out this year because it's a contract year, you're gonna have a line of suitors that are ready to talk,
and not Ryan suitors or Gary.
No,
suitors.
No, sorry, suitors. Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yes. Like I don't know what the value looks like today compared to the trade deadline. If one of them were to be traded, I would have to think that a full season is more attractive to a contender than 20 games and then a playoff run, right?
For sure.
So it is an interesting spot. I mean, to the question of what is this team, you asked, you know, are they a playoff team? I don't think they are. I don't think this team is a playoff team. Not that I would be surprised if they competed for a playoff spot, but when you look at the Central Division pecking order, Colorado, Dallas, Minnesota, Winnipeg, St. Louis, Chicago, I would all have above Nashville right now, which puts you 7th out of 8, with Arizona now coming back into, or not back, coming into the Central Division.
There are two players of why I think, I look at this roster right now and I see a 500 group. I see it's a 500 record. Okay, 41-41 if you really want to go that granular.
No overtime losses.
No, 40, it's spectacular. 41-41. But there's two players that control that destiny, and their names are Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene. If Ryan Johansson can play, and I know it's a tall ask, I get it, but if he can play like he does when games matter, okay, more consistently, I'm not going to say all season long, it's hard for anybody to get up for 82 games, but more consistently, then this team is now, let's call him 55 and whatever the math is. Okay, if Matt Duchene can actually be a 55, 60-point player like he should be, and all of a sudden he kind of responds, now you're looking at a playoff team, right, who can do some damage. But it rests on those. I hate to say that, but it rests on those two guys. Their track record is long enough to where there are question marks around the regular season, and the regular season is what puts you in the playoffs. So for me, it comes down to two guys.
Don't we have enough proof that from those two players that is unlikely to happen?
For sure. I'm saying that the success of this team, playoff, the perception of this team between playoff and 500 team for me, it rests on two players. That's what I'm trying to say. It's an opinion. I'm sure a lot of listeners are agreeing with me right now, I would think. But on those two players lies the success of this team. Yes, they can get to the playoffs if those two guys are average, okay, and then Johansson can light it up in the playoffs and everybody can feel great, but can they be a playoff team on paper? The answer is yes, if those two players return to their potential form.
Do you feel like we fully answered the question of what is this team? I don't think we did.
Because nobody knows what it is.
My point exactly. I don't think anybody really knows what the plan is here with this team. They're clearly not committing to a rebuild. They're not really going for it. You're not going for it if you're shedding Victor Arvidsson and Ryan Ellis cap hits. So they seem to me to be even more in that mediocre middle where they don't really have a ceiling to be a cup contender. They're not going to bottom out. So I would expect them to be a fringe playoff team next year and just, you know, not be in any sort of conversation that you would want this team to be in.
And so I'll put it this way. So the last 6, 7, 8 years, you've seen this team has mostly been identified as a defensive first team. Okay. Then they can kind of get pieces like Forsberg and Johansson in its prime, you know, Arvidsson, right? And you're like, oh, this team could score some goals, but they're still solid on defense for the most part. And over the last 3 or 4 years, right, the penalty kill hasn't been good. The power play hasn't been good. It's consistently now. Now Rene's retired, so Kinsaros carry the mail for 65 games. I mean, all this stuff, right? They don't have an identity, in my opinion, anymore. There's not this thing that you know Nashville for. And I think that's the problem.
On the other side, we'll continue to take your reaction, 615-737-1025 at our text line and phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Plus, a lot of other moves today around the Central Division, around the National Hockey League. We'll get to all of those, the big ones, coming up next. Ryan Porch, Jeremy K. Gover here with you live on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, rolling right along here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Jeremy K. Gover, don't call him Dean Portman, on Zoom right now on YouTube, Twitch, and Twitter. Looking like Dean Portman with the do-rag and his hockey get-up for the game that he has coming up later tonight as he gets set. You can watch on YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch. We're talking all things Preds. What is this team? We go to Derek on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. He wants to weigh in on the Nashville Predators, and what is this team? Derek, welcome into Preds Insiders.
Hey, guys. Appreciate it. First time I've ever caught the show. Love the conversation. You know, I think
thanks.
The hey, it's a 500 team, and, you know, Duchesne and Johansson are the key. It's an interesting conversation. I kind of think the other way, though. Johansson and Duchesne are known commodities. I think, you know, you can look at, hey, listen, if Tolvanen and Janot and Terrier all continue growth and take a step forward, I mean, the power play looks more lively than it has in almost a decade when Tolvanen was, you know, sniping from the circle. And, boy, if they could get that going and, you know, be a, yes, defensive first, but, gosh, don't get a penalty because their power play is lethal. I think those guys taking a step forward is more the key to being a playoff team than looking at Duchesne and Johansson, because we kind of know what they are at this point.
Hey, Derek, thanks for the call. I happen to agree that the fact that you kind of know what you're getting out of Johansson and Duchesne, you're going to need young guys to really elevate their game. That's a lot of pressure on Tolvanen, Tomasino, Cody Glass. I mean, Cody Glass was a top 10 pick. Not saying that he will live up to that here in Nashville. We don't know. But what if he comes in and the change of scenery does him a lot of good? So if they do get a lot of young players stepping up, Alex Carrier, who is now going to be icing or skating a lot more minutes with Ryan Ellis in Philadelphia. I mean, I think there's a lot of factors to this, but I happen to agree with Derek on this one, Gover.
Yeah, I agree with that. One thing we haven't touched on, I think, is the penalty kill, right? I mean, because he brought up special teams. Derek brought up special teams, and that's important for sure. The power play with Tolvanen is definitely better than the power play without Tolvanen, but I do think if we talked about Janot maybe as a net front presence, you put him there. He's a big body. You got to move him out of the way. He's willing to do anything. And then you've got Tolvanen sniping in his faceoff circle. But then the other side of that is penalty kill, right? You can take a penalty, but you haven't had a lot of confidence in your kill. And the loss of Erik Haula, a lot of people were like, okay, whatever. But the loss of Erik Haula hurts that quite a bit. Not just because of the shorthanded goals that he put up, or the shorthanded chances that he put up, probably more accurately. But he was just a tremendous penalty killer. And I don't know where that's going to come from, who's going to fill that role. But that goes right along to what your point is, Porth. Like, we don't know. There's so many question marks in this lineup right now. It could all turn out swimmingly. This team could challenge. It could be third in the Central and walk into the playoffs and feeling pretty good about themselves, and all of a sudden we're like, wow, we got that wrong. But it also could be the opposite. It could be a total self-destruct mode, where Duchesne and Johansson don't show up during the regular season. The young guys are not panning out. Cody Glass is what Vegas supposedly thinks he is, which is a first round bust. You know, it could be all those things, and then, you know, then where are you at? You're not necessarily in Buffalo territory, but you're not in a good spot, is what we're trying to say. So there's so many question marks, and I think that's the most intriguing question of the season, is what this team is.
So Erik Haula going to Boston today on a 2-year deal worth a little over $1 million per. That was one of the smaller signings today compared to some other big ones. Let's go rapid fire here because, Gover, we are running out of time. You have a hockey game to get to as well. Ryan Suter going to Dallas on a 4-year deal worth just over $3.6 million per year. Real quick, your thoughts.
I guess he doesn't want to win. Those are my thoughts.
I mean, this team just went to the Cup Final 2 years ago.
Doesn't matter.
They were injured badly last year.
I don't care.
Dallas is going to end up in the top 3 in the Central Division this year. You watch.
Okay, fine, but they're not going to the Stanley Cup final. They're too vanilla. I don't care for that team. I don't like how they're constructed, and they got some goaltending questions.
Did the Stars ever do to you outside of playing the damn goal song all night long at the Cotton Bowl while we were trying to do Preds Insiders? Let's see. The Colorado Avalanche swinging a trade for Darcy Kemper from the Arizona Coyotes this evening in exchange for Connor Timmins in the first-round pick, all because they lost Philip Grubauer in free agency to the Seattle Kraken on a six-year deal worth just shy of $6 million per. Interesting musical chairs there in net for the Colorado Avalanche.
Their offense is so good, especially when they re-locked up Landeskog. That the goaltender, it does matter, obviously. I mean, but in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it matters much who your goaltender is, as long as they're serviceable. They're that good. They remind me of the early 90s Penguins, actually. That's nothing against Tom Barrasso or Ken Reggett. It's just that, you know, you could have had a mediocre goaltender back there and you're going to win 45 games, because they're just so good.
Their Stanley Cup chances do not come down to the goaltending. It comes down to whether Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, and Cale Makar, all of them show up in the playoffs, and if they do, look out.
Right.
Perhaps the most interesting contract given out today. Dougie Hamilton, 7 years, $63 million to the New Jersey Devils. $9 million per for Teach Me How to Dougie. I mean, he is making the same amount of money as Roman Josi for the next 7 years. Which one would you prefer to have go over, Roman Josi or Dougie Hamilton?
There's no question. It's not a homer pick. Roman Josi by far. I've never been a big Dougie Hamilton fan. I think he's a great goaltender. Great defenseman for sure. But to be considered one of the top five defensemen in the league, I don't know if I put him that high up.
I mean, that contract is going to look horrid in the coming years. Just and New Jersey, like,
I know
why.
That's another one I could apply the answer to. I guess you don't want to win.
Also, what I thought was a little bit of an overreaction from Hockey Twitter, the deal that I liked almost the most today, Gover, Philip Danault to the LA Kings on a six-year deal. They now have a center lineup of Andre Kopitar, Quentin Byfield, and Philip Danault. That is a pretty strong 1-2-3 if Byfield pans out as a youngster.
It's murderer's row. LA's got the foundations of a good team if they can get all the pieces to click.
And Victor Arvidsson now with the LA Kings. Gover, don't call him Dean Portman from the Mighty Ducks. Thank you so much for joining me here on Preds Insiders this evening.
Thanks for having me, buddy. We didn't even get to the Cody Ceci contract and the horrible contract that Edmonton signed him for. I mean, that was just, I mean, come on, people.
There were a lot of bad contracts, but you expect that on the first day of NHL free agency or any sports free agency. The first day, always some silly contracts. Gover, score a goal for me tonight.
You know, I will try to do that, Porth. I've got to score a goal for me. I haven't scored in a few games, so. But
all right,
I'll shout your name when I do it.
You are due. For Jeremy K. Gover, I'm Ryan Porth. Thank you so much for listening and watching Preds Insiders this evening. We'll be back with you Monday at 6 right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.